is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello and welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 3, season 14. In a week where we were kind of missing, Chris Meek has confirmed at Toyota. The role wasn't 100% confirmed that it was Meek. And nobody's really, really questioned why Peugeot pulled out a World Rallycross and Sebastian Ogier rejoined Citroën. Go figure. There you go. Just do the maths. Anyway, it's good to be back. On my right, I'll say hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello. You never come to me first. It's good that the others aren't here for now.
I know. Well, I always save you to the best to last.
Best to last.
And we've got a friend of the show. We've not had him on for a little while. Thought we'd get him on. He's got some stuff going on. He's on his way to Rally Spain, but just for the crack this time. Ocean Price, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Well, thanks, Gary. Cheers for having me.
No, it's good. It's good. We inadvertently bumped into each other in a Starbucks on Rally GB, and I thought, we need to get Ocean on. He must be up to something. And then Ryan Champion said, we've got to get Ocean on. So I'm going to ask Ryan Champion to ask you what's going on.
Funnily enough, I bumped into Paul Evans on World Rally GB as well, Ocean, and he was saying that he's been doing a bit of work with you recently. And I mean, we haven't seen you in a frontline car. Obviously, you've been keeping sharp with the historic stuff, but we want to see you back at the front of Rally in an R5 car or something similar. So what are the plans? What are you working on?
Well, as usual, there's always plans going on. Sometimes it's some wackier than the others, but yeah, there's a lot been going on, to be honest. We have been working on trying to get back to WRC2. We've got painfully, to be honest, a few times in a few different rallies, but haven't quite managed to sort of pull it off with the timescale we had. So it's been a bit annoying, really. But, you know, the plan still remains the same. The goal is the same, and that's hopefully to return to doing some WRC2 events next year.
Now, you've been keeping close to rallying. Obviously, you work on Rallyo, the Welsh coverage of WRC. What stood out to you on Wheels Rally GB? What got you excited?
To be honest, there was a lot of things. I mean, when you're in the hustle and bustle of it with the TV crews, it's a bit of a different side to things. And it's quite nice to see that side of things, really. You do appreciate what they do. But I mean, for me, that rally was all about, you know, Ogier just, you know, basically coming out from nowhere. He had his bad luck and obviously managed to pip everyone at the end. But, you know, the way he managed all that and how it was all done was something else, to be honest.
Now, we're looking forward to Rally Spain. Obviously, a couple of years ago, you were there in the R2 Fiesta at the time. What do you think are the real challenges going to be this weekend, and who's your money on?
Well, to be honest, there's a lot of old faces appearing back. You know, your Ken Block, Loeb. Obviously, Loeb's thinking, can I do it again? I'm not sure if he can. He has shown the speed. But Spain is obviously the only mixed surface rally of the year, and it's a real challenge. I mean, it's a rally that I personally would love to go and do again. Obviously, this year isn't my year, but hopefully we'll be back. But I mean, you can't really rule anybody out. I mean, the top three for the championship, they're going to be really, really strong, and it's going to be a case of, who's going to do a mistake or anything like that. But I do know that it's forecast quite a bit of rain for the first day of the tarmac stages. So, I wouldn't safely put my money on anybody at this stage because, it could be anybody's rally.
Osh, if I can just come to you, you've been there. Are you doing any TV stuff on Spain at all?
No, nothing planned anyway. No, nothing planned.
Okay, just from the point of view of when you've done GB and maybe some of the other stuff, from a driving point of view, have you looked at stages in a slightly different way now when you've been with cameramen and stuff like that? Have you seen corners in a different light almost?
No, not really. I'm fairly analytical anyway. You tend to use your driver input and experience when you're doing stuff like that. Really, obviously, I was very lucky enough to join Bexham to do a stage or two on WRC Live. So, from a driver point of view, you do sort of tend to analyse things in a different way to maybe what a commentator would. But in terms of yeah, the other way around. And do I look at it a different way? Not really. I just use my rally driver cap and that's it, really.
Now, we're going out to Spain. You did, joking aside, you did say it was for a bit of fun. But how's are you all right around the service park when you're not doing the rally? Have you got a way of managing that? Because, you've been at the forefront of it. You've been in several WRC service parks over the last few years and various other ones. How do you kind of keep a lid on it? Is it because you're working towards something for next year? Does that kind of make you feel a little bit better about it all?
Oh, it's never easy, to be honest. I mean, it's very, very frustrating, especially sometimes when you look at the timesheets and you think, well, we're capable to being here, there, and what. It's quite difficult, really. You tend to sort of talk to everybody during the weekend, and it kind of all gets forgotten about. But it is a shame when people do ask you the same, especially at Rally GB. Oh, it's a shame not to see you out. You tend to find yourself answering the same question over and over again. Why aren't you here? Why aren't you doing the rally? And so on and so forth. But Rally Spain, I haven't been back since obviously winning the Drive DMAC trophy. So, yeah, it'll be quite a strange one, because obviously the last time I left there was a very happy memory and probably the biggest achievement in my career. So now to go back to just spectating and, yeah, see what's going on, it's strange. But I mean, it's, the WRC is a moving roadshow, and you always bump into the same people. Doesn't matter which event you're at. So it's always good to have a bit of fun and catch up with a lot of people along the way.
Good man, good man. So with regards to next year, obviously you're trying to find a way back to WRC2. We've heard some horrendous numbers with regards to that. We've got John Armstrong who's been doing bits and pieces with Ryan, of course, on we can talk about it now. It's weird, we can actually say it. We've been so suppressed in being allowed to say the dirt game and not mention what's been going on. But of course Ryan's been working with John Armstrong, and John obviously is keen to get back. He was obviously doing the DMAC Drive Trophy as well, same time as you, and he's working on budgets and stuff like that. And just hearing the numbers, it's the price of a house times two. It's just nuts. How do you even go about making that start into trying to find budget?
To be honest, I have had a good go at it in the past. I've managed to succeed to where I've kind of got to on my own. All of it's kind of been my own sponsorship hunting so far and up until now, but it's got to the point where having a full-time job and doing it, I can't do anymore. So I've had to resort back to sort of having a bit of help off the commercial guy. And to be fair, he's been quite good in trying to open a few doors for me so far. And if it wasn't for him, okay, we haven't actually been successful as of yet, but there's a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, I think without, I call them my team, and these are the people that I work with on a sort of daily basis, off the phone, on the phone, emails and stuff, that try and get me, these are the people that are trying to get me back in the car. And if it wasn't for them, I probably would have to admit defeat and say, let's look at this differently and go rallying just for fun. But yeah, it's down to them, really, and their expertise and their experience in the industry of finding sponsorship and partners.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck. Obviously, we'll stay in contact, and anything we can do, we will always support you. Just one last thing before you go. The Mark II Escort's looking very shiny.
Yeah, I need to finish it. I do need to finish it. And to be honest, it's on course with being finished for Christmas. So if I can finish it before Christmas, then that'll be my own perfect Christmas present to myself. So I'll be
good man, good man. Listen, mate, you go home and get yourself packed, and obviously get yourself on that flight to Spain, and we'll get you back on Absolute Rally very, very soon, okay?
Spot on. Thanks, guys.
Perfect. Ocean Price, thanks for joining us on Absolute Rally. We'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team, paying homage to heroes and legends of years gone by.
Spot on.
Dear God.
Have you had any problems with your car?
Not really, only between seat and driving wheel, that's all.
So I can go?
No. No,
but I know I can,
but if you allow me.
Best in the world!
But of course, Kielder continue to push forward with the latest technology, producing cordless tools for the world of motorsport. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Have you figured out the connection yet of the six voices? Now, we've had answers in for Wales Rally GB. They're all winners of that and things like that. You're thinking too hard, folks, about the answer to what links them all. Keep thinking, keep working on it. As I say, Ryan Champion got it in 10 seconds. It took me about 3 days. And I had to ask Nate for the answer in the end. But anyway, listen, I'm wittering on. We're very, very blessed. We've got another great guest with us for this week. And it's somebody that, again, Ryan Champion's been working with. Doesn't he work with everybody? But a co-driving legend. And I don't say that lightly. It's only when you look at EWRC.com you realise just how many events this guy has done. But still, there you go. Stefan Prevost, welcome to Absolute Rally for the first time.
Hello, and thank you.
No problem at all. Now, the secret's out. You've been working with Ryan Champion. So I'm going to hand you over to Ryan Champion at this point, because obviously you guys have probably had dinner and told more stories over dinner that you probably can't broadcast than you can broadcast. But I'm going to hand you over to Ryan anyway.
I don't think our non-existent legal department could cope with the inquiries, Tony. But
no.
Stefan, you've had a fantastic career, really, in rallying, which continues to this day, and you're still competing at all levels, right up to WRC. But take us back to the beginning. How did you get involved in rallying? Were you a fan of rallying? Did you go spectating on rallies? How did it all start for you?
Sure. I live in Wee in Belgium, where the famous Condros Rally is held since 45 years now. So I remember the first time I went there, I was 12 years old, and I remember to see all the cars, all the actions, and that the Hannu Mikola was there driving a Mach 2 Escort from David Sutton. And since that day, I said, wow, that's really something I want to be involved with. And at the time, in the early 80s, the Ricky were free for 1 month, and all the drivers were doing Ricky with proper rally cars and racing tires and everything day and night. And it was crazy. Right after school, I jumped on my bicycle and I was riding up to the stages and spent all the evening there and looking and waiting for cars doing the Ricky and things like that. It was fantastic. And since that age, I was following all the Belgium Championship events and even some WRC events in 84, 85, just as enthusiast spectators. And that was great. And really, that's what I wanted to do. And I really wanted to be involved with the co-driver job, as I find it more interesting. I knew I was probably not a good driver, and I thought I had more chance to reach a top level sitting on the right side, right at least in Belgium. So, and also I remember when I was 12 years old, a driver like Marc Duez won every rally in the championship with a proper group for Porsche, and I had the chance to have a run with Marc in the rally car, and all the drivers knew me, but unfortunately I had to wait until I was 18 years old to get a competition license and do my first rally. But as I said, I knew all the drivers already, so my first rally was already with a top guy and fighting for top position. So it was fantastic.
Now something you just mentioned there in your early interest in rallying is probably something that's very alien to our listeners now, but I remember going to Belgium in the mid 80s, actually going to Ypres Rally and actually spectating on the recce as well. And like you said, the Group B cars at the time with the plain white liveries, it was special, wasn't it? Particularly in the night, there was thousands of spectators just watching the recce.
Yeah, it was crazy because they were proper rally car. And I remember the first year I did Tipper was 87, 88, something like that. It was written in the rally regulations that sport or speed Ricky were allowed from 6 in the evening until 6 in the morning, all yeah. night long. And it was clearly written in the regs. So even the top drivers, they had a car in front of them on the Ricky and playing on radio to tell them about traffic and everything. And all the spectators were there already closing all the roads at every junction so drivers could just drive sometimes faster than on the rally because the rally was so long and okay, the competition was maybe not as big as it is now. And you would not have won Ypres with 3 seconds gap like 20 or 30 years ago. It was maybe like 3 or 4 minutes. So I'm sure some of the guys were quicker on Ricky than on rally sometimes. Yeah, it was and such a nice atmosphere and so many spectators. It's different time for sure.
Now, as you said, you already when you started co-driving, you started at a relatively high level, and I saw you co-drive for a guy called Yves Maton early in your career, who obviously we all know very well now. Now you started off competing in Belgium, and then but pretty quickly you moved on to doing world championship rallies. I see you did the RAC rally in the late 90s. What was that like? I mean, obviously you knew Belgian rallying very well, you knew tarmac rallying very well. So to come to the RAC rally, which was still then on maps, I think at that point, that must have been quite a big jump.
Yeah, 89, I did my first WRC RC event in GB. Yeah, it was, we were just amateur with front wheel drive, W Golf. But yeah, I was so proud. I was 19 years old at the time, and to reach that level, even as an amateur, and Rally GB was so famous at the time. I was, let's say, used to read maps because you have to practice like this to do Ricky and stuff. And so I was not afraid. Obviously, we did okay and finished the rally for sure. But I think the most difficult thing was this rally. It was like crazy. Like you had maybe 4 hours sleeps per night or something like that. I think that year it was 68 different stages, something like that, maybe 72 even. Was just crazy, and probably 680Ks of stage in just 3 days. I mean, this was not for a gay driver for sure.
we often talk about how the rallies have changed more recently, but you've co-driven for many of the top names within rallying, particularly the star Belgian drivers, and quickly you moved on to co-driving for a man maybe you're best known for co-driving for, and that's Bruno Thierry, and you had really an incredible career together over, you know, longer than 10 years.
Yeah, we did 12 years together. I was really lucky to be there at the right place at the right moment. In 1991, we started together. Bruno was really the, let's say, the rising star in Belgium, and I knew he had a chance to have a good career. So he split up with his co-driver, and they really wanted to work with a young co-driver and build something together instead of working with a professional co-driver from Belgium with a bit more experience. But that worked well straight away because also we were used straight away to do some rallies abroad, because in Belgium Championship in the early 90s, you were allowed to score points abroad for the championship. So the second rally with Bruno already was Rally de Garrigues in French, also a really famous event. And then we went to Poland, we went to Skoda Rally in Czechoslovakia. That's a funny one, this one, because the winning prize, and we won that rally with the Opel, the winning prize was a brand new Skoda Favorite. that's also a different time. So I remember I had to drive this car back to Belgium by road. We just put the registration numbers from the Ricky car, and I had to drive it because we had no trailer or anything to bring it back to Belgium. I was probably not so proud to cross my city driving this little car that was nothing Skoda at the time, for sure. But as I said, we were used to quickly to do different rally than Belgium, so we knew that we had to work on a proper pace note system, because Belgium is not that difficult to ride. It's quite difficult to drive because there are tricky conditions and shit, slippy tarmac and stuff like this. But I mean, that's not a country where you learn to make notes, for sure. So that's maybe the point why it worked well. And Bruno was a really talented driver, one of the best Belgium I've seen, for sure, and such a nice guy. So they were probably my best 12 years in my career, for sure.
And you kind of evolved with the cars that were around at that time. Like, you started off with Bruno in the Opel Team Belgium with front wheel drive Opels, but that was a very professional team at the time.
Yeah, very professional. Most of the mechanics and the car was built in UK with BTR, that's Tim Ashton, and all the mechanics were English, so that was quite good. But yeah, it was quite a professional team, but also really small. Like, maximum we were, I think, all together 16 people on every WRC round we did. So the atmosphere was really great, and everyone was behind and involved 100%, and that makes also a big difference. But the car was quite fast. It was really good fun to drive, even on gravel. And we learned so many things with this car, for sure. And a good program also, because it was obviously cheaper to run than a four-wheel drive car. And we've been lucky also. The plan for 1993 was to drive the Belgium Championship with the Calibra 4x4 Turbo, but that car really never worked, and we knew straight away that it was not going to be a winning car for Belgium. So the team offered us the option to do seven rallies for the WRC in 93 with the new Astra, instead of doing a full program and a full campaign for Belgium with the Calibra. And that was maybe the key in Bruno's career, for sure.
And then you moved your first full WRC program to the Ford team. Now, you just talked about a relatively small team with Opel Belgium. I guess when you moved to Ford, things then changed slightly.
Yeah, sure. But in the beginning, we were entered by the Haas Sport team, but they were really good, and the engineer were so good. So I'm sure that car was as good as the factory cars. But we had a first great year with the Cosworth, with the Escort. So the factory team asked us to drive for them with Mickey Biazian and François Delecour on the last rally of the season. That was Rally GB, where we finished on the podium for our first RAC with Bruno, and that was really good, and also a big push for the following years, because Biazian, I think, retired end of 94, but to be honest, we beat him nearly every rally we've done with Bruno. So I'm sure this the place in RAC helped for 95, when we get the full program with Delecour.
Yeah, and was that quite an important point in Bruno's career? Because obviously, been a Belgian driver, was he previously seen as a tarmac expert until getting that result on the RAC rally?
Yeah, sure. But he was really talented and as quick on gravel and on tarmac, and also in the fog. I think our pace notes were quite good, and we worked really well together, and we were unbeaten with Bruno in the fog. Belgium, I remember San Remo with the small Opel. We had some third or fourth quickest time, quicker than Patrick Sneijers and people like this. They were in San Remo as well, and also in the fog. I remember Bruno in Rally GB. We were like third overall with a private escort in 97 before the engine blew. I remember everyone was talking about Richard Burns' performance in the fog when he catch Oriol in GB 97, and that was true, and Colin and Richard were just flying, but we were not far behind them with Bruno, and so he was, Bruno was a really talented driver, just a bit too old when it started for him, but at the time you had to prove what you can do, and that take more years for sure. So like Bruno was already 30 years old in 94 when we started with the escort.
And you talked about the escort there. You then moved into the escort World Rally Car. But through your career with Bruno, you competed in Group A Subarus in the various Subaru World Rally Cars and Toyota Corolla WRCs, the Octavia, and also the Peugeot 206 WRC. So some of the most iconic and some of the best cars of the era. Which cars maybe stood out for you? Which do you remember with a special affection?
I would say definitely the Group A Subaru. To be honest, when we were with the escort and we saw Liatti or Carlos or Colin with the Impreza, I think that was the dreaming car, and ProDrive was definitely the top team. So the dream was there, and when we had the chance to run with them, it was just fantastic. And we did also some events for the European Championship, Belgium, and everything with the Group A Subaru. And yeah, there are two cars in my career. It's number one, definitely the Group A Impreza, and the second car, it's the WRC Focus from 03, the first one from Christian Loriot. And these are the best two cars I've been in, for sure.
And you just talked about 2003, and that saw you move on from Bruno to a young Belgian driver at the time in Francois Duval. Now, Francois had a short and sharp career in the WRC. How was it co-driving for Francois? And I imagine he was quite a different character to Bruno.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he was so talented. It was, in the beginning, it was great to sit next to him. He was so young, and he drove like I was eating or working. I mean, it was just so natural for him, and really impressive. But soon I realized that he had no motivation. He was so hard work, like he didn't want to put any effort on it, and he thought his talent would be enough to win rallies or even championship, and motivation was not there. He just enjoyed to drive from start to finish of the stages, but that was it. No clue about testing or car setting or manage the tires on long stages in Acropolis in Greece. So we always struggle with some good result because was always something missing. And the atmosphere deteriorated quite quickly between us, because that was not my idea and my approach of rallying, but he really didn't care. I remember him calling me before Turkey. I remember 2004, we had like Acropolis, Cyprus, Turkey and Sardinia or whatever, all together 2 weeks apart, the day before we had to meet at the airport to fly to one of these events. He had no clue if we were going to Acropolis or to Cyprus, to be honest. That was typical Francois.
If I can just come in, because there was a unique time around this period where, as I say, I can remember Francois doing some rallying over here in the UK in the Super 1600 Puma. And then he was very, very, you know, there was this ladder of opportunity that Ford were using. And then obviously he ended up in the Focus, and they ended up obviously in the full factory team. And then, you know, there was this thing about supposedly M Sport, Malcolm Wilson, giving him this 5-year contract, but he opted to go with a year with Citroen. Was that a true story? Did that actually happen?
Yeah, it's so complicated. For sure, Malcolm was in love with Francois in the beginning, but also to come back to that point, typical Francois, in Malcolm's 3 years contract end of 2002, there were one point in the contract where Francois had to go and live for 2 or 3 months in UK at M Sport and try to build a car and practice on the mechanics and everything. And Francois didn't want to sign the contract only for this point. So he didn't want to move just for 3 months. So he was nearly about to sign a contract with Kronos, a private team who entered the Peugeot 206 WRC, just 1 year contract for shit money instead of the 3 years contract. And Malcolm had to remove that point in the contract to get him signed this. That was typical devil. So I think it's no much more to say. But then the situation would be strange with Ford, because we ended in Japan in 2004, and then Malcolm arrived also in Japan, had to fly back straight away to Germany because he just learned that he lost the Ford factory deal for 2005. And Francois still had a contract with Malcolm and Ford for 2005. So Malcolm was a bit worried. Marco Martin was leaving for Peugeot anyway. So to be honest, Malcolm said to Duval's manager, okay, if you can sign Francois somewhere else, that would be easy for everyone. So we can stop the contract end of 2004. Francois got a drive instead of getting paid just for nothing, because for the moment we are not going to do the championship next year and so on. So, and that's the year where Carlos Sainz said he was going to retire end of that year. So to be honest, it was because 2004 with Francois we had a great year, like 5 podium finishes and stuff like this. So it was really easy for Francois manager to get him a contract with Citroën, with Lotus for sure.
Wow.
But then everything went correct between Malcolm and Ford. Malcolm got his contract again for the following 3 years, but we had already signed with Citroën for 1 year, so it was too late. For sure, Malcolm came back with a proper deal and everything, but nothing we could do, unfortunately, for sure. It maybe would have been a different story, but wow. Anyway.
Wow. Well, another driver who's actually, Chris Atkinson was on our podcast literally about 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, and it was almost like another relationship there that you've kind of had with him. Well, not quite as long as Bruno, but you were with Chris for such a long time through the really good days of, obviously, you know, of pro drive, and then coming down the other side, I suppose, of that slope of the decline, I suppose, of pro driving, Subaru pulling out of the World Rally Championship.
Yeah, still we did some rallies together for Subaru USA this year, so it's now 11 years nearly I could drive for Chris. I met him when I was with the team with ProDrive in 2006. I had a contract with Stéphane Sarrazin just for Darmac, but Chris was there also as a third car. So I met him that year, and then when I saw he split with Glenn McNeil, I just dropped him an email to say that I was free. And he said, yeah, I'm interested, so come for a test, and then we see. So we did 3 days of test together with Subaru in Sardinia. He was quite happy, and then I got the deal. And as you said, we had some great years together with Subaru, especially 2008, where we were on fight for second or third place in the championship. So, but Chris is such a nice guy, so easygoing, and I really love Chris's pace notes. It's yeah, sure, it's busy, but that's definitely the most precise notes I've read. It's difficult because it's busy, but also shit notes are so difficult to read for a car driver, because if you don't know where you are, I mean, it's even more difficult. So, yeah, I really enjoy my years with Chris. Even when Subaru pulled out from the championship end of 2008, it was such a big disappointment, I think. I nearly died when I heard that news, but luckily we had some great years after that. Even in APSC, we did 3 years in Asia Pacific Championship, and so different people, different rallies, and it's obviously a great, great championship, proper stages and good fun atmosphere, and we really love that. And then back again for some WRC with Chris in 2012 with the Mini, some one shot here and there with Ken Block's Fiesta in Mexico, and some silly things in China with Volkswagen. And Chris is one of my favorite for sure. Every time he calls and say, okay, can we do this or that, I'm really happy to work with him. He's such a nice guy and really easy, and as I said, his notes are so good that it's a pleasure to read.
I have to ask you about one driver that you sat with, and he's a bit of an enigma. We've mentioned Francois, but another enigma to me in the WRC back in that kind of period of the early 2000s was Novikov.
That's true. Yeah.
And he came from like a bolt of blue, a bolt out the blue, and then he kind of disappeared in the same way. But you've sat with him on a few events. What was that experience like?
I just had a phone call from Citroën, to be honest, after Finland 2009 and this famous jump that I'm sure anyone knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then his co-driver said, okay, that's enough. So as I worked with Citroën and Chris that year with the private C4, they called me and said, would you be happy to have a go with him? So I said, well, why not? I knew he was really talented, exactly the same as Duval. But I say, okay, he's young, maybe he wants to reach the top and work. And but okay, soon I realized that he was just 100% copy of Francois Duval. So case notes were absolutely ridiculous, and no way you could understand what the pace notes say. So he was just driving on his eyes and nothing on the notes. And I crashed a few times with him for sure. This was 2009, so we did Bahum Rally with Skoda Fabia Super 2000. Then we did Catalunya with the C4, crash on day one, back on day two Super Rally, crash on day two first stage, back on day three Super Rally, crash on day three end of story. And then, as you said, it disappeared for 1 year or two, and then rang me back again in 2011. I had a proper discussion with him about what was his plan and everything, and he said, no, I'm a different person and I really want you to co-drive for me. So I say, okay, let's do it. I'm not in the WRC, that's still where I want to be. So we agree for 2011 with the Fiesta and five or six rallies. So I did Mexico and Sardinia. And that was just the same story. So I say, okay, I had enough, sorry, but it's no way we can work this way. So I pull out after Sardinia, to be honest. But also a really talented guy. It's a shame. Really, it's a shame.
And interesting point you make there about, you know, talent not being enough. And I think, and we talked about it briefly last week when we were chatting. Even now, do you think that makes the difference between the good drivers and the best drivers? They still need to work. They still need to apply themselves. They still need to improve. Do you still see a big difference, like I said, between maybe good World Championship drivers and the best?
Yeah, of course. I'm sure you need some talent, but then when you see people like Ogier or whatever, they're working 100%. Okay, maybe not anymore for Seb because he's got the experience, but I'm sure a driver like Neuville is still 100% behind this job and focus on what he has to do and going through the notes every day from his in-car camera and try to improve every little thing. And I'm sure to start, Neuville was nothing compared to Novikov on the talent pure. I mean, on the driving, I'm sure he had no chance. But the thing with people like Novikov or Duval, they come, boof, first rally with a factory WRC car. They don't need to learn, and they're not talking bullshit, you know, like I'm new, I need more experience and blah, 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 blah. No, straight away, they're able to be quickest on some stages and then, fight for the top and then crash for sure. But 3, 4, 5 years, it's after that, it's the same story. The speed doesn't increase, but the performance are still up and down, and you know straight away that this is not going to work. When you see maybe someone like Neuville, he was straight away in the top, but was missing a bit here and there, but he worked like 100% to try to analyze and to reach the top, and he's still improving for sure.
Looking at one common thing that you keep on talking about is obviously is the work ethic and the driving and pace notes. You've mentioned that a few times as well. You've worked with a number of drivers when they were kind of starting out, and you know the last young driver that kind of screams out that you spent quite a lot of time with, like Stefan Lefebvre. Do you get the satisfaction just as much now from working with a young driver and developing them than just actually going to do the events? Is it an equal kind of reward for you now?
Yeah, for sure. I'd be happy to share my experience with a young driver, but not someone like Novikov, you know. I just want to do it with someone who is clever, who wants to reach the top, who wants to take Ogier or Neuville as the one to follow. And this I don't mind, but Stefan Lefebvre, to be honest, had not the right approach. I mean, pace notes are absolutely crucial now, but it cannot work if you start to write your pace notes from an in-car camera and say, okay, this is what Lop or Ogier is doing, they are the best, let's do the same. But they even don't understand why it works for Lop or Ogier. Like Lefebvre, he thinks he's got similar pace notes to Lop, which is absolutely not true, because he was not going deep enough to what others are doing. And then you come on a rally, and the first rally I did with him was 2014 Wells Rally GB. I was in China with Chris and the team rang me and say, wow, we lost this co-driver, we need someone to do GB. I say, well, if you find me a fly from Shanghai to somewhere in Wales, I don't mind. But, and I thought that's what we did, and I was really enthusiastic fantastic because everyone in France was talking about Lefebvre. So I say, wow, that's maybe the new Ogier. So let's try. But after GB, that rally, that first rally we did together, I get an option to have a full program with him for 2015 and even with some rally with the WRC car. So I was really happy, but I say, well, now we have to work. And I ask him, do you want to meet during winter and try to work on your pace notes? I'm sure there is something wrong with the notes. It's too complicated. It's okay now with a little R5 car, but when we're going to do Germany with the proper factory DF3, it will be a complete different story. Trust me, this cannot work. And just to give you an example, he's got three numbers in his notes. So the quickest is 140. And the slowest is 10, so 140, 130, 120, 50, 40, and so on, because that's what Ogier and Loeb does. But I'm sorry, but there is no logic here, for sure. Your brain cannot understand that. Why is the logic, why the 140 is the quickest and 10 the slowest, maybe, but not 140 the quickest, for sure. And he started to ride his pace note this way. But he put a second number in his notes, and that's the length, the distance of the corner. So he never used long or very long or whatever. He just put a second number. So right, 86, that's an 80 speed corner, 60 meters long. But once it starts to be busy and three numbers like 146 into 132 plus crest and don't cut and keep in and all this, I mean, it's no way this can work, for sure. And well, I've tried to develop, to explain, and he understand, and he say, yeah, I'm sure you're right. But and then yeah, the following rally we start to ride the same shit. So it's still what is he using now? But look, he's going. It's not going up. It's going down and down and down. I'm sorry. He's a nice guy. He can drive for sure. But I'm sure it's too late now, just because of this kind of attitude. You know, I've worked with a lot of drivers. I've seen many things, and I'm sure this kind of pace note cannot work. I mean, you don't need to be Einstein to understand that. But okay, that's the way they do. And then you do Ricky, starting from really bad notes, then you change everything on your two Ricky passes, and that's for sure the best, because that's what your eyes see and the feeling you've got, the distances, the undulations and all this. And that's the way it should work. And then after Ricky, back again on the video and start to change everything again, because that's not what he see from his in-car camera. And you try to explain, you new in the business, you need 1 year to do proper notes. Then after the rally, you work on your in-car and you change your notes from the in-car and the pace note. That will work for the following year. And you need experience. It's impossible that you know that rally as well as Ogier when it's your first time you do that event. But no, that's not the way they want to work. So every evening start to change everything again, and then you fucked on the rally because the pace notes doesn't work, for sure. I mean, yeah.
Now, you mentioned experience there, and you've co-driven for a lot of young drivers at the start of their career, and maybe tried to help them with your experience. But you've also more recently done some either longer events like Safari or demonstration type events with the most experienced legends of our sport, if you like, the likes of Bjorn Valdegaard, Stig Blomqvist. You sat with Marco Alain as well. What is it like to co-drive for those guys? And I guess it must just be a complete contrast to the young guys, really, who were trying to make their way in WRC.
Yeah, that's for sure. But it's such a fantastic feeling. I mean, there are all drivers that I've seen along the stages when I was a teenager, 12, 13, 15 years old, and it was a dream. So, I mean, when I went to Finland in 1984, Marco Alain with the Lancia 037 was the proper hero. And then when I get the chance to do my first historic event in 2009 with a Tuttle Porsche, with Marco Alain, really, I had no idea about historic cars or whatever. I just did Rally Island with ATCO, with the C4 WRC, and then the organizers asked me to team up with Marco Allen the following weekend in 1973 or the Porsche 911. So I had no idea, but just because it was Marco Allen, I say, yeah, okay, for sure, let's do it. And wow, I just couldn't believe it. It was so fast, so much fun. Marco is such a fantastic guy, and he can tell you stories for hours, and that was really fantastic. And then the organizers of that event called Boucle de Spa, they asked me to try to get some famous name into the rally. So I first did Kenya that same year, 2009, and I met Waldegard there, and I say, oh, would you be interested to drive a proper Mach 2 Escort in Boucle de Spa? That's a rally won 25 years ago. So he say, yeah, for sure. And then I had the chance to do three times that rally with Bjorn, and I was also so impressed. Like, he was like, if he was fighting for the victory in Monte Carlo rally, he was behind every single details, like tire pressure, tire selection, and pace notes on the Ricky, everything, like, wow, still 100% professional and nice guy also, and they are all legends, so you feel proud when you sit next to people like this, for sure. Then I did a few times the Safari Historic, always with Porsches from Tatil, which is definitely the best for Kenya. And I did that rally in the past for the WRC. I said, wow, never again. This has nothing to do in the World Rallies, in the World Rally Championship. This is 100% bullshit. And then someone called me for that historic Safari rally. And wow, straight away, I fall in love with this rally. That was completely different and proper long race, 9 days even, beautiful stages, some rough but also some fantastic sections. So I did that rally 3-4 times, and last time with Stig Blomqvist, that's also a proper legend, and we won the Kenya that year. So they are fantastic memories, to be honest. But yeah, I'm really proud that I've done that, because in my head there are such a big names. They are my childhood heroes, and really that talks to me for sure.
Now, Kenya, as you said, has really captured your imagination. We're here, the WRC are going back to Kenya. How much of the spirit of Safari do you think they can capture in a short 3-day WRC style event?
Honestly, I don't trust this. It's not going to be Safari Rally anymore. I've heard they want to use private lands and to do the rally, for sure. Helicopter won't be allowed like we had before. It will be a completely different type of rally. Nothing to do with the old Safari Rally in the championship, for sure. So, yes, some people will be complaining, like we saw in Turkey three weeks or 1 month ago, like everyone wondered what they were doing there. But I think it's good to have some different events in the championship, and still some rallies where the fastest is maybe not the winner. It's great, I mean, because it's a big combination between driver, co-driver, cars, rhythm and everything, and it's quite good to get 1, 2, maybe 3 events like this out of 13. But honestly, I really don't think that Kenya will be something like that. I'm pretty sure it will be more like some of the Argentina stages or something like that. It cannot be nowadays. It cannot be a proper Safari rally like it used to be 15, 16 years ago. It was too expensive anyway, and team won't be happy to get this kind of bill, because I remember 20 years ago, a company or factory like Toyota or whatever, for them, a win in Kenya was more important than to win the WRC event. So they spent maybe 3, 4, 5 months there just to get ready for that event. And it was so expensive for everyone. And that's why, I'm sure that's why they really disappeared from the championship. So to get it back next year or in 2 years' time, whatever, it will be a completely different thing. And still they will call it Safari Rally, but I'm sure some of us will laugh about it for sure.
if there's a couple of things I'd love to ask you before we let you go, Steph. I'm really conscious of how much time we've took, and we do thank you for it.
No worries.
With regards to aspirations that you've still got in the sport, is there still things you still want to do in the sport? Obviously, we're seeing you traveling, you've just been talking about Safari. I believe you're going back to New Zealand in the not too distant future as well. Is there still events you still want to sample, still experiences you still want to have?
Yeah, for sure. There are some dreaming cars that I like to sit in, like a proper BMW M3. This is a dream for me to do a rally in this car. Now I'm nearly 50 years old, so I have to pick up things like this to keep the motivation. But still, I'm nearly 50, not 75. So rallying is still my life. Every day I sleep rally, I eat rally, I work rally. And yeah, still, even to get back in WRC, I would be more than happy to do that. But time are also a bit different now. Money is not the same. It's my business. So I need to think about win money to pay my bills end of every month. So that's why I got a feet in cross country 2 years ago. So I did Dakar this year. I did some cross country things in China and all this just for the money, not because I like it. This is nothing to do with rally, really. But yeah, still, it's so many things I'd be happy to do. Like, to do a rally with a new generation of WRC car, for sure, that would be something fantastic. But if not possible, for sure, I'm more going to the dreaming side, like proper rally cars, like Peugeot 306 Maxi on tarmac, or, as I said, BMW M3, or some legend driver again. All these kind of things. I'm happy when I can sit in a rally car. I'm still busy this month, as you said. I have this Condros rally next week, and going back to New Zealand, that's true. Going back to Dakar again in January, so that makes me happy. But to be honest, the dream would be to get back to WRC, but I'm not dreaming about it anymore.
Okay. If I can ask you just before we let you go, if I can ask you, we could give you one event, one car, one driver you've sat with, what would it be?
Would be New Zealand, definitely the best road in the world for rallying, with a proper BMW M3 and whatever the driver, just someone able to drive it and really spectacular. I don't care about time. And
perfect.
We drive with the window open just for the sound.
Stefan, it's been great having you on, and we thank you so much. We'd love to get you back again soon. It feels like we've tried to condense it down into 40 odd minutes, believe it or not, but we're at 50 minutes now anyway. But it would be great to get you on again soon.
Okay, no problem, when you want. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Stefan Prevo. Thank you for joining us. Absolute Rally. We'll be back after this break, folks.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. They say you don't know where you're going until you know where you've been. And in rallying, we love to reminisce. The cars, the legends, the style. And we're on a campaign to bring back Service Team Headbands. Woo-hoo! Become a headbander. Find us on Twitter and Facebook to get involved. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. That's a proper middle of a podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. I was surprised by some of that, it's fair to say. But anyway, Jack Benyon hasn't heard it yet, because we've been saving Jack till the end of the podcast. We were going to have John Armstrong joining us. Unfortunately, John's going to be with us next week now, but Jack Bengian's with us because today, Wednesday, is Jack's birthday, 24th of October. How old are you today, Jack?
26 years of age.
26 years old. Ryan Champion, what were you doing when you were 26?
It's still annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. What were you doing? What was it? Where were you then? Did you have your Peugeot 206? 106, rather? Was that around that period of time?
Would that be? You're putting me on the spot now, aren't you? Yes, I would do. Yeah. The 106 Super Cup, yes.
Yeah, yeah,
When Chris Meek was doing 106 Super Cup, yeah.
There you go. I'm not going to make it all about you because it's Jack's birthday, but I just thought I'd ask anyway. Jack Bengian, what are you doing special for your birthday?
I've been in London most of today, just been to some galleries, just chilling out in London, nothing too exciting, and then I'm just going for a meal with some friends a bit later on, so just, bit of a chilled day.
How grown up does Jack? I've been to a gallery for most of the day, and we're just going out for food tonight.
Taking in some culture, but I've got a kind of a funny anecdote for you.
Go.
I did get a text off Seb Marshall to say happy birthday, which tells you a lot about the kind of guy Seb Marshall is.
What a
lovely bloke. But I replied to his birthday message asking if he could ask Chris to record me a birthday message. if you've read MN this week and you've read David Evans' column, I'll read it to you quickly. It says, finally, good luck to Meek and his new co-driver Seb Marshall, and in brackets, we all know it's going to be him. And it goes on. But so I sent Seb cheekily asking for a video message off Chris Meek for my birthday. And he replied, have you got his number? So maybe Seb Marshall's scotching the speculation that he's going to be with Chris Meek next year. Who knows? Maybe he can get him on the show next week.
I think he's very canny, is our Seb. He's not
very clever, isn't he?
He is. We started the podcast with me making a sweeping generalisation, welcoming Chris to Toyota, questioning, of course, whether it was his off. Do we really care? I'll be honest with you, Jack Bengian, I don't. I also pointed out a couple of things at the top of the podcast. Nobody appears to have got onto the fact that Peugeot pulling out World Rallycross and Sebastian Ogier going back to Citroën, and that's where they found the budget. Nobody seems to have put the maths together on that one. But anyway, there you go. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. On that one. Were we all excited before we go any further and before we start talking about Rally Spain, which is what we're going to finish with? Were we all excited to see Chris back in a World Rally Car?
Yes, very much so. He's a character that is always interesting on a rally. You know, you never really know what you're going to get out of Chris when he performs to the best of his ability. You know, you've got to say he's one of the best out there. You know, if not the best in the current crop. So hopefully we'll see a few performances like that next year. And it's going to be interesting to see how he goes up against Oit Tanak and Jari Matalatfa as well.
Happy days, Ryan Champion. Of course, you know Chris. The news did come out after our kind of episode one of this particular season, because we did a pre-record, i.e. the week before for last week's podcast. But we've cheekily just made reference to the fact that him and Paul have, of course, split. Were you surprised by that?
Maybe not completely surprised. You know, they'd spent a long time together, but I think also when you step back from the sport, it maybe allows you to reassess things and look at what you want going forward. So it is something else. Obviously, Chris is going to have to get in place pretty quickly, regardless of who's confirmed alongside him. You know, he's going to want to work and get the pace notes in place and get it a well-oiled machine before he comes back, because obviously he's coming back to WRC with a brand new team, but Tommy's keen to give him a lot of mileage in the car, but he'll be keen to get that relevant co-driver alongside and get that partnership going.
Jack's just made reference to the fact there's been lots of rumours. Seb Marshall is kind of the odds-on favourite at the moment. Do you see that as a good fit?
I think for Seb, it would be exciting, obviously, to sit with arguably the fastest British driver of this generation, and I'm sure Seb would love to sit alongside a British driver. It would be, I guess, an interesting move, wouldn't it? You'd sort of think, well, if you look at Chris's age and Hayden's age, you could argue that maybe Hayden Paddon has potentially a longer career left in WRC, but who knows? It might not work out like that.
No, it might not. But still, we'll see. Chris has got a 1-year deal, and I guess I guess it's fair to say, Jack, it definitely is the last throw with the dice. He's had his chances, and this is it really now, isn't it?
Well, we don't really know that, I guess. It depends how long Chris wants to continue and, you know, how long his employer will keep him on for. You know, if he wins next year's championship, you know, he might, you know, who knows, does he defend it? And then does he go on to carry on? You know, he's, you know, we all know his age and, you know, he's at the, you know, the back end of his career in terms of the usual age of rally drivers. So, yeah, you know, logically you'd say, you know, around now is when he'd be looking at retiring. But if he does do well next year and he does kind of upset the odds a bit and beat Oit Tanak and win the championship, then who knows whether he'll defend it. That'll be.
I think that's a good point, Jack, what you just touched on. The difference with Chris is still hungry to prove what he can do, isn't he? You know, you say yes, at this age you may be starting to look at stepping back from WRC, but that's drivers that have been competing at this level in a top line team for 10 or 12 years. And you know, we know Chris hasn't had that, has he? You know, Chris has been fighting for all these years to get these top line opportunities, and he's actually had so few full campaigns that the hunger's still there. So it's like you said, I think with Chris, it's when the opportunities dry up rather than him wanting to step back.
I think we've got used to how young everyone is as well, haven't we? We've got Cali Rovanperä and, you know, we've got Max Verstappen in Formula One, and it seems like, you know, 18-year-olds need to be the finished package and ready to win a world championship by the time they step into whatever category they're in, whereas, you know, the advancements we've got in, you know, training and things like that these days, you know, if, you know, we're at a point in history where if Chris does want to carry on, then things are set up for him as best as he's ever been. And if he does have that motivation to continue, then there's no reason why he can't.
You set us up very nicely there talking about young Finns, because I'm going to go to Gary Boyd's fact. Yes, I am. You can't stop me, Jack Bengen. Right. 2019 silly season scorecard using Finns as a unit of measure. Citroën gain one Finn, Toyota lose one Finn, M Sport still have one Finn, and Hyundai remain Finnless. There you go. That was Gary Boyd's fact. Rally Spain this coming weekend. Despite the fact that there's obviously a championship that is being fought tooth and nail, I'm still finding myself getting giddy by Petter Solberg, Sebastian Loeb, and Ken Block. Is that a little bit sad?
No, I don't think it is, because it's added excitement, isn't it? You know, you want more drivers, you want more cars, you want more interest, and in some ways, I guess that's one thing that's changed with the WRC. You know, we have normally now set drivers in set cars for the full championship, and we used to see the snow specialist, the tarmac specialist coming in and being able to win these rallies, and it mixed it up, didn't it? Whereas now we used to it just being the sort of championship protagonists that are involved. So I think it's great when other drivers come in.
No, I don't know what it is. I was watching the preview last night, and of course we had Derek Dornacy on the other week, and we were going to get Derek back after Rally Spain. That's another reason why I'm quite excited by it, because I know once Rally Spain's out the way, we can get Derek back and we can do part two of that epic piece we did, and we're going to do a part two, by the way, with Stefan Prevost. How can we not? Jack Benger, you're going to love that bit, by the way. coming into Rally Spain, if we can start touching upon that now, boys. Are we ruling out Jack? Is Oit Tanak gone? Is he out the equation?
It's a tough one, isn't it? He definitely needs to win both of the remaining rounds. What we've seen from the past few rounds is that, you know, he's got the best package at the minute. He's the fastest driver in the fastest car, or the two sort of level out, and, you know, he is the best package. So I think he needs to win both of those events, and there's no reason why he can't. We've seen him win on similar surfaces already. We saw him go from Finland to Germany, winning gravel, tarmac, doesn't really matter at the minute. The Toyota seems to be the best package of Oit. So I don't think he's out of it, but it's going to take some problems for Thierry and Sebastian. And, you know, we've seen that in the last couple of rounds as well. So, yeah. No, in simple answer to the question, I don't think we can rule out yet, because we haven't seen everything yet, and we've definitely seen Thierry and Sebastian have problems in the previous rounds.
Right, I'm completely and utterly with Jack on this. I haven't done the maths, and I'm surprised Gary Boyd hasn't sent them.
That's just what I was going to ask. I was going to say, you know, of the three of us, there's only one professional in the room, isn't there? So has Jack actually done any numbers on this?
Yeah, that's a point.
David Evans wrote a piece last week, I think it was, or the week before, looking at the championship permutations, and he basically came to the conclusion that there wasn't any point, because it's still so complicated that, you know, you could work out a million different permutations for how the championship works.
But if, for argument's sake, if Tanak wins both, But I assume if either Ogier or Neville has two solid finishes, that would be enough to rule Tanak out of it, would it?
And then you put you put the power stage in then as well. That's a whole different aspect these days as well, doesn't it?
That's one of the complicated things is the power stage points. But I tell you what, I'll work it all out and I'll tweet it out so that you can reach
it. It'll save Tony and I, you know, trying to do maths.
I was just about to say, Jack, you can do it tomorrow. Right, it's your birthday.
Okay.
Don't be staying in tonight.
Tonight's count your birthday. Candles, you know, count your birthday kit.
I'll have enough problems adding up how much a pint costs in London these days, so I think I'll leave that master.
Surely somebody's going to buy you one.
Someone's going to buy you a drink, mate, for your birthday, surely. Come on.
You say that, but you're talking about an absolute banging here. I don't think there's going to be
absolute
a queue.
Absolute banging? We've missed absolute banging, haven't we? I think we tweeted that the other day.
I tell you what, Tony, shall we each transfer Jack a fiver? So he's got a £10 budget. So
and the rest?
Buy a pint.
Yeah.
In London.
And the rest? A fiver? Yeah. You're having a laugh.
Jack Bengen. Right. I'd shush.
Jack.
Yep.
You've got a Yorkshireman offering to transfer you cash for no catch at all here. Right. Just take it and wind your neck in. Even if you've got to add a pound to it, you're still a tenner up.
Fair point. Yeah. I'll say that.
There you go.
Only if the Scouser does the same and doesn't steal it off somebody.
Oh, here we go. Are we doing stereotypes, are we? Stereotypes? Oh,
well, you give you both my bank details and you're going to end up taking money out of my account, aren't you, rather than actually sending it in. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. Anyway, listen, boys, we need to crack on because we are at the very end of the podcast. We need to tidy up. I have mentioned this already in the podcast so far, is that we are getting answers in, and we've had various answers in, by the way, with regards to the voices. Not the ones I hear in my head. No, the ones that go out on the Kielder's thing. A lot of people have recognised them and what they are, but they haven't got onto the link. So Stephen Wade, Anthony Carr, Duncan Leewall, James Smiles, Simon Gillespie, Tom Lord, Dean Herridge even got involved, although he got quite abusive on Twitter about it. Philip Mays, Nathaniel Dillon, just to name a few. Matthew, Mark Brotherhood, thank you all for sending in. Many of those are right, or certainly you've got five of them right. I did screw up by saying there was five voices. There is six voices in that particular piece, which now we've cleared up. There is a common theme that runs through all. Now, some people have gone to the fact that there's a GB connection. Yes, there is. But that's not the theme that the guys that Akilda and Ryan Champion, by the way, I'm blaming him, have agreed that is the link that we're looking for. So I hope I've tidied this up as best as possible. Does that make sense to you, Jack?
It does.
All right, good. Right, boys, can we dare do quickly predictions?
Sebastian Ogier is going to win.
Ogier, Ryan Champion.
I'm going to go for an Ogier Tanak comeback.
You're going to go for an Ogier Tanak comeback. Okay, I'm going to go Yari Matti. There you go. I'm going to be different. I'm going to dare to be different. Folks,
you're the hipster version of Absolute Rally Predictions. You are. You always go for someone different.
I like to mix it up a little bit.
Good. It's fun. We're just boring.
I know you are. But Jack, go and have a cracking birthday. You've got to go and catch a train or a bus or a bike or something or a Deliveroo or whatever it is you've got to go and catch. You go and catch that. Have a cracking birthday, mate. And sorry we didn't get you earlier today. Ryan Champion, you go away and do what Ryan Champion does, man of mystery. And folks, we'll be back same time, same place in your little podcast hold next week.
Absolute Rally. Powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.